Welcome to the Debug Log number 2. Today's show is all about you and your UI, or user interfaces. Now, this is one of my favorite subjects, but it tends to be an area that a lot of game developers neglect or just wait until the end of the project to address, and that's a huge, huge mistake, because the UI is the backbone of usability for your game. It's the first thing players see when they start up the main menu, and if you have a game like an RPG or a simulation thing, they're going to be spending 50% of their time in a menu, so it's really important. So in today's show, we talk about our experiences with the various UI solutions for Unity, from the old native method to some third-party plugins that are pretty interesting, to the brand new UI system available in Unity 4.6 and up. We also talk about some best practices to keep in mind when you're putting together your UI for your game. We hope you guys enjoy. This is the Debug Log, episode 2.
What was that? That wasn't me.
That was Ryan's beer bottle.
That was obviously
throwing
the
away my beer bottle.
Oh, come on. We all know it was Jack Daniels.
That was three Jack Daniels bottles.
You're listening to the Debug Log, a podcast about Unity game development. My name's Andrew Curry.
I'm Obino Parra.
I'm Zach Schneider.
And I'm Ryan Kilgore.
And this is episode 2. How you guys doing? This is 3 episodes. A little backstory into this. We've done a bunch of test episodes, but we've never made it past 2 episode 2. So
that's some
congratulations.
Good.
Everybody, yeah. Round of applause. Yeah.
Longest stretch ever. Yeah.
So, this week, last week we did data collection, data management, how to store your data. You want to stick my data where? And this episode is all about another big thing that sometimes you don't think about when you first get started. I kind of did because I'm a UI snob, because I come from doing graphic design stuff. But a lot of people put together a game, they start putting their characters in there, whether they're 3D or 2D. You're like, this is cool, but like, how do I do UI? And then you get to whatever engine you're in, you're like, how do I just make text on the screen? And sometimes when you're in certain engines, it's really hard.
Well, it's curious that you say that, because people do tend to pay more attention to all the flashy stuff, all the gameplay, but really the first thing that somebody sees when they turn your game on is the GUI system, the user interface.
So yeah, that's true. And that's the thing. It's like, it's going to be the thing. This is all my point. I'll get into this rant later on about UI and why it's important. I'm passionate about this subject, but it's the main thing that's going to guide players through it. Like, there's going to be gameplay, there's going to be other stuff, but you're going to have menus, you're going to have instructions, you're going to have tutorials, you're going to have whatever it is, but that user experience is going to be the main thing. And when you're just doing prototypes, this is like the kind of thing we talked about in the first episode, episode 0, about the finishing projects, because it's like the last 10% is the hardest, and the hardest, this usually is part of that last 10%, is really polishing and getting UI in there, because you never think about that, and you're like, oh, we need to have some kind of feedback and some kind of score up there, or some kind of power meter, and you get into that, and you realize, oh, crap, what are my options? So I think this is a good one. We kind of start with the data one, which is really something that would be forward thinking about your project, and this is probably be good to start playing around with before you even get started, is just what UI system works for you, because it's going to bite you in the butt if you don't. So go ahead.
No, it's exactly. I feel like it's something that sometimes you wait on until the end of the project, but it's something that you actually should kind of front load and see, like, how is the user going to interact with my application? So UI, UX, and all that is kind of interrelated, and just how they're interacting with your application, and providing a good UI to interface with your application is so key. So, you know, actually thinking about that beforehand, it doesn't have to be like the final art and everything, but thinking about how the user is going to interact with your application and your game is actually pretty important. So it's something that you should front load as well as with, you know, your data and stuff. So go ahead.
Yeah, you keep saying that, this is how the user interacts with your program. But, I mean, it's also a two-way road. So this is how you deliver information to the player. So it not only do they interact with your program through the UI, but then you can also deliver information to them.
Well, especially when games like you have a platformer, it's going to come up like, oh, I got 3 stars in that level or whatever. It's like Angry Birds. It's not as important. You know, you have the title
you
screen.
You only got 3 stars?
Yeah. I got that. It's the hidden fourth, guys. You don't know about it, but I got the hidden fourth. But if I mean if you're playing an RPG, you're living in those, or you're living in the UI, or if you're actually better yet, if you're playing like a loot game, like a Diablo game,
exactly.
You're stopping mm-hmm. every second and like going through the UI and like, hold on, what's that? That's a 4. Okay, that's a okay. That armor's a 6. Like you live that whole game in the UI 50% at least, mm-hmm. and so it's not a minor part of it. So
exactly.
It's a big thing. So today we're going to kind of do a general survey of the available, or I mean, it's probably not all of them. There's a lot of probably kind of 2D or texturing, rendering packages, but some of the biggest ones that we've heard of and had a little bit of experience with. And then we're going to go into some kind of just kind of factors when you're looking into those UIs we talked about, or just things you need to think about. And then we're going to talk about some kind of best practices or stuff we learned that kind of yields the best results. So first, we start with the granddaddy, the first UI
the
system.
The grand legacy, the vintage yeah. Unity UI.
Unity just, they, right now as we record this today or last night in Europe, they did like a Unite Europe, and they talked about, they released a Unite, a 10-year anniversary thing. So they're 10 years. They've started in 2005,
yeah.
In June of 2005. And so I wonder, I don't know those versions were, but I bet Anguille was in there. I bet it was the first thing they coded into that. So, anybody who wants to tackle the glory that is on GUI?
I cried a little when I first saw it.
Exactly.
To be honest,
I avoided on GUI like not, the plague when I first got it started.
It's like its own separate update function. Is that what it is? Like, I didn't understand what it was.
Yeah, and it keeps polling for button presses. Why not just wait for an event? I just didn't understand.
Okay, so what we're saying is this is on GUI is the native for until this past year, 2015, 2014. It was the only way you could do UI natively without using a plugin or something. And it basically consists of, it's all programmatic. Yeah. It's all within any class that kind of inherits from Mono behavior. You can override an on GUI function. And then there's different, you can make buttons. There's a whole, like, a library thing. What are all the included components?
There's buttons, label boxes. Oh, that's a flurry.
We all said UI buttons.
Yeah, buttons. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of...
So there's a button. What do we have?
Button and boxes and stuff.
Yeah.
So I think there's labels. There's text input. There's, like, input fields. There are I already said labels. There's buttons.
Boxes.
Said that about six times.
It is boxes.
Anyway,
you're in the loop, Zach. Get out of the loop.
Yeah.
So yeah,
most of it is, I believe, handled through like rectangles.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You draw a rectangle on the screen, and then that rectangle, I guess,
gets that label
or that text, or the button.
Well, you know what the worst part about that system, though, is like, you know, all these components we're talking about, there's no, like, WYSIWYG editor for it.
Exactly.
You're just, like, sitting there in script, like, you know, throwing numbers out, like, I think it's maybe around this big or around that wide, and, you know, you just never have a clear idea until you start it up, and you're like, nope, that's wrong, okay, back to the drawing board.
One of our coworkers, Raphael, he loved this using on GUI,
because he's an old school guy,
so every time he could do something simply in code, that's exactly how he wanted to do it, and he liked building the whole thing out, and that's what on GUI lets you do. So it lets you completely build your UI using code, so you could set out get your layout, you know, when the layout or when the rectangle begins, when it ends, you know, the different pieces that go into it, and you have to map that out using, like, you know, coordinate system. So you have to constantly be thinking about, you know, where this, you know, the tip of this rectangle is, and the, you know, the
he's
bottom
like
point.
He's like an old school, like, id tech programmer, though.
Exactly.
Like, that's why he likes that, because, like, oh, no user friendliness, no documentation, okay with me.
Exactly.
I mean, I guess one of the positive things is it's very very accurate. So you can go down to, like, pixels and make sure it's pixel perfect, whereas some of the other GUI systems, I mean, they can do that, but it's mostly visual. So, like, for instance, the new GUI system, the anchors can mess with your pixel,
pixel
margins.
In general, like, they have the floating number thing's a weird problem. Because it annoys the hell out of me, because I like pixel-perfect stuff, and it, like, why is it 0.012297499? Like, why is it doing that? It just starts shifting.
Oh, the precision
issues. Yeah, it's like, it annoys the crap out of me, because I'm OCD in that way. But on GUI has an interesting thing, too. They have, like, a whole... I've messed with that before in, like, a... at a last job when I was making kind of like stuff for like a corporate event. I used a Unity thing for it. They have like a whole styling system with that on GUI.
Yes, but it's the custom styles, yes.
But it's really obtuse. It's a very strange system because you have to. I mean, it's almost it's a very. They're trying to make it similar to like the CSS, like in, you know, web development, HTML and stuff. So it's like you set up the style, but then you go in and just set up. Well, I want all the things to be red, and they have this border radius, and it's kind of interesting. I mean, I get the idea, but it's not. I mean,
it's funny. It sounds like they're like a. But- you know, bashing on GUI, but you know, it does have the upside. You know, like now that you know, on GUI is like the legacy thing, and the new Unity UI is available. On GUI still has a purpose and still has like a use case, and that I think is done with the editor scripting, and that's like the only way you can do editor scripting or editor layouts and windows. So you still have to use that legacy UI to do, you know, the UIs that you want to do for your editor inspector UIs, I guess. So that's where you would could probably still make a lot of use of on GUI, and you know that Unity legacy system. So
that's a good. You just reminded me. That's a good topic for another episode.
Yeah. The editor scripting and everything.
Because that's cool. That's a neat topic. But yeah, that's true. Like the Unity UI is in on GUI. Mm-hmm. So it's like, hey, if you like Unity, that's what it's built in. So
that's true.
And if you and it looks like that too, and it's down and dirty. Like it's quick. I mean, even for some people coming into the new UI, and maybe they make it easier, but it's a little more intimidating. You know, it's like, I don't make a canvas, and then I have to do what? Mm-hmm. Like, where this is, you're like, no, I just make a rect, and that's a button. And that's just a callback, and inside that rect, I just put whatever I wanted to do. That's easy. So some people, it's really quick and easy for just kind of debugging and prototyping. That's so true. It's still useful. So the state of situation is on GUI existed as it did, and it exists, if it only exists as a thing that's good for prototyping or good for debugging, people like me or people who obviously get pissed by that because they're like, well, I can't make it, you know, I can't do the things I want to do. I can't make it look like I want to do. I can't easily import, you know, assets, art assets, and I can't easily kind of integrate some kind of animation and just kind of interactivity to those things. So then like a whole bevy of new solutions popped up on the asset store, which we've talked about that before. There's asset store, has a bunch of cool solutions, but there's a bunch of, this is one of the most popular kind of areas, because I've always remember like in GUI and other, these ones, these UI systems were always the most popular assets and the most purchased assets.
Yeah, because so for a long time, everyone was just begging Unity to, you know, provide them with a new UI system.
It
was,
and they like, promised they were. They talked about it
and it took
for a while.
Forever. Yeah. It took forever, but.
It took years. It took years.
For them to eventually come out with something, but.
Yeah, and so some of the quick ones that we haven't had much experience. One, there's one called, I mean, this is in not chronological order to the what we experienced them. And there's one called Dacon Forge, which a lot of people use in a game that we like called Rust. They experimented with for a while, and so that's one. It's a little like the ones we'll talk about later. There's one called Coherence, which I think is actually still kind of relevant. I've messed with it before, and I actually kind of think I want to mess with it more, just because basically what Coherence does, it's like basically an HTML renderer. So instead of learning some kind of weird obscure UI system or whatever their scripting language is for whatever, for a particular engine or for a particular kind of system, you can basically just write HTML, CSS, JavaScript, and run it. Render it in the browser.
Yeah, I remember when I played around with that for a second too. When we were researching for one of our projects, and eventually met up with Scaleform. But with Coherence, I remember you could render whole websites onto a texture in your game scene, which was really cool. And that's I think one thing we were thinking about. And it was like, should we do it or should we not?
We didn't know much about it at that time. We didn't think like it was a. It was kind of an unknown, and we picked Scaleform, which we'll talk about in a second, but we picked that because it was like, it's like the industry standard, and that's why we went with that.
Exactly.
But I kind of want to go back to Coherence because I'm like come from a web developing background, and the one outside of really getting into it, and there might be, I'm sure it's game development and libraries, so I'm sure there's a billion problems with it like there are with other libraries, but the one kind of argument just kind of philosophically I would make for it is that like CSS and HTML and JavaScript are standards based language, you know, systems. Mm-hmm. Like you have web standards and you have like they have committees that vote on these standards, and like it's a thing that kind of can go throughout, and you can also use it to make websites and stuff too if you got good at it. But whereas, you know, these ones like OnGUI or Dacon Forge, just like, and the ones we'll talk about, they're like, well, we didn't like that function, so we just made the button function different. So you don't know, like, this is like, it's much more common sense based approach to it. And
And I kind of still think CSS, as much as I bitch about it a lot of times, like, it's one of the best, like, styling languages, as, like, keeping, like, kind of logic separate from structure, separate from styling and aesthetic information. Yeah. So I kind of want to go back and mess with it, but you guys don't care. So, so anyways, we looked at coherence at that time. And then we also knew about Scaleform. And Scaleform is basically the exact same thing as coherence. So whereas coherence renders HTML, Scaleform renders a Flash Swifts, right? And it's, before I'll let Obina get into it, but the reason we went into it is because it's basically the industry standard. Every AAA game any of you guys have played over the past 8 years, mostly have their UIs have been made in Scaleform, which they make it in Flash, like you see all the old Flash sites that you used to go to, but then basically Scaleform renders that into Unreal mainly for the past few years, but in Unity too, they have a Unity plugin. So that's why we went with it, because we're like, hey, you could also get a job. This is me and Obina being prudent in that situation.
Yeah. That's a resume bullet point right there. Because,
like, coherence, what are you talking about? In GUI? With Scaleform, that's the ticket.
Exactly.
So explain Scaleform to us a little bit. And
Scaleform, Andrew said, you know, Scaleform is huge in the industry. And one of the things that makes it so huge is that it uses Flash, which can be so versatile in a UI system. So you can do, you know, so many tweens. You can do, like, complex animations that you wouldn't be able to do, you know, with just on GUI or in GUI or something to that effect, or even, like, with a CSS-styled page. So, you know, the Flash aspect of Scaleform makes it, you know, such an asset to have in your UI utility belt, if you will. With Scaleform, what you're doing is, and with Unity, that Unity plugin for Scaleform allows you to port Flash Swifts into your Unity project, streaming asset project, or you put it in a folder called Streaming Assets, and you're able to load that Flash file into your Unity game. They also have, like I said, with Coherence, you're able to render things to texture. You can render a whole Flash Swift onto a texture or object in your scene. Again, you could either, you know, load it onto a texture, or you can load it on as an actual overlay on your UI. So, you know, that's how you can have, you know, like we were talking about with the RPGs, and you can just overlay as a whole inventory system, or, you know, I don't know, just a task bar or action item bar with that Flash Swift. People have done a lot of crazy things with Scaleform, of course, with Flash. So they've done, you know, you can make a preloader or a launcher with Scaleform and Flash, which I've seen. I think Guild Wars 2 did that with Scaleform, and I think they used Scaleform, or the Scaleform with C or something. So it wasn't really with Unity, but you could do the same thing with Unity if you wanted to, and make that whole Guild Wars launcher with Scaleform. And that actually could be a cool, you know, tutorial to do, is like how to use Scaleform to make a launcher or a patcher system.
Scaleform is neat. Like, the problem with Scaleform, they don't have a lot of documentation, especially with Unity. Or just like videos and stuff. I don't read. I just watch videos, guys. but it's kind of neat.
Show me.
It's like, I mean, it's kind of inspiring, because what I'd really love is, I mean, I guess they don't do this because it's like, I don't know, trade secrets, or I don't know. But the amount of different kinds of UIs that have been built with Scaleform, from like anywhere from like Mass Effect to like even Skyrim's, that, you know, that crazy update into the constellations, all that's in Scaleform. That's all Flash. Mm-hmm. But,
you know, and,
go ahead. No, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. Well, you know, I don't know a lot about using Scaleform, but the number of games and systems that have in the past, it seems to have an ability to fit into your 3D game space well. Because I remember, like, for instance, Dead Space and, like, I think Borderlands. When you'd bring up those menus, and they would just, like, sort of fly around in the 3D space, you felt like it was in the scene with you, not just, like, a flat overlay, you know, sort of projected onto the... you know, flat onto the image there. It was like, actually, oh, look, you know, in Dead Space, I'll bring up my menu, and it sort of flies out like it's my own PDA in the scene, and it just really sort of melded well with the whole flow.
Yeah, it's kind of neat to go through that list on their site. It's a weird, it's kind of humbling, because I think in the past, I mean, probably 5 years, AAA games, I mean, you're talking about multi-million dollar games, above $10 million games, they're made with either Scaleformers or some kind of proprietary UI. Period. Like Halo, all the Bungie games, all the probably Activision games, everything. So that's why we got into it. With Unity, I don't know if Unreal, we don't have much experience with Unreal 3 or 4 with it. And Unreal 4, Unreal 3, the UDK used to include it with it. If you
exactly.
got that, it was part of the package. So they were really in bed with them. But now they have their own system too, like a Unreal Motion Designer or something. So we got into it. There's some issues. We've had some problems here and there.
Yeah, like, you have some problems with Flash?
Andrew? Yeah, I mean, that's funny. That's like a rhetorical question.
That's redundant.
Really. Yeah, redundant yeah. question.
Problems
yeah.
and Flash are synonyms.
Exactly.
Yeah. What was the max number of crashes you had in today, Andrew? Was it like 24?
Oh, well, that's a Flash problem too. When we have a lot of projects at work that are in Flash, but I have to. Because we work with artists in Flash, I have to use the Flash actual application. I can't just use the Flex SDK to compile it. And mm-hmm. I've made Flash games before where I didn't touch Flash. It's just all code-based. But because that's a part of the workflow that's simpler, and that's what we didn't mention. We'll mention later about Scaleform, but I have to use the Flash app. And when I was working on projects, I'd have like 30 crashes a day where mm-hmm. the app would just shut down. Like, ooh. All right, because it would go to compile it, but it's not a heavy-duty like coding program. You know, and it's like this kind of artsy program, so it doesn't. It just couldn't handle my awesome code, so I don't know.
All right, there we go.
Yeah, that's why things crash. It's because they can't handle your awesome code.
It's too much for you. It's too awesome. Mind-blowing. I just blew the computer's mind.
Yeah, that's why you get the crash.
Yeah, just shut up. We did that one time, and that's a real quick aside. One time in college, we had, you know, you start, it's probably like, it's programming like 102, you know, and the guy, like the lesson we were supposed to do is basically an infinite loop, but we didn't know. We're dumb kids. You didn't know what you're making. And we do the program. Like, usually in that class, I get done really fast, and a couple of us would get done really fast. Like, oh, we finished. And then we finished it, but like, there were no results. So, like, what's happening? And at that time, it was my first MacBook, so I was like paranoid, and I had temp monitor and all this stuff. I was like, why am I getting it max temp on my CPU? What is happening? And he's like, oh, yeah, that's an infinite loop. You need to like kind of shut down your computer. I was like, what? So you didn't tell me that? So, infinite loops.
Your computer's going to die. Yeah.
So, anyways, Scaleform. Take it or leave it. I mean, Unity, there's problems with it. We've had, would you recommend it, Obina?
I definitely would, actually. I would recommend, because, I mean, even after I left the project that we were working on at work, I started to use Scaleform on my own personal project, because, like, once you understand how it works and you could find so many use cases in your games and in your UIs. So it's like, and the possibilities to animate things and do things with Scaleform in your game is just so much. It's just like a lot more easier once you understand how Flash works, how tweens work, and how animations work. You could do a lot of things with your UIs in Unity. So I would recommend it if you're wanting. Go ahead.
Yeah, and once you get back, and we'll talk about this later in kind of our guidelines of what. Depending on which ones you choose, but Scaleform was attracted to us because, like, most of the artists and most artists know Flash.
Exactly.
Right? And they're really comfortable with Flash. So, mm-hmm. but until Unity, and I think we talked about it last time where they talked about at Unite how they're getting better at, like, two people working on the same project and merging, you know, the results. Mm-hmm. But if you're, if you're in, like, an artist and you're a programmer, if you're an artist working on the same scene or with a UI that the programmers are, you can't do that. Like, you're going to get weird things happen. But with the Scaleform, the workflow is like, they can be working in Flash and not even touching Unity. Mm-hmm. Like, get away from me. Like, you don't have to actually do what we're doing. You know, and then you can integrate it. I didn't mean that to be offensive to all the others listening. But, I that's a betrayal thing because I'm like a daywalker in that sense. But, like,
yeah, you're like half. Yeah,
but, like, half mud blood.
Yeah, exactly.
But so that's an attractive thing for Scaleform because you can really, you can, that's what I've heard about reading some articles about, like, especially Bungie, like, you can actually prototype whole UIs without ever getting it into the game system just within Flash. You know, you can send it around like, hey, how does this work? How does this menu system work? How does this leveling system work? But you don't have to even integrate it first. And so the workflow, I think, is a big plus for Scaleform.
Yes.
So, moving on, if you're intimidated by Scaleform, you don't want to play on the big boy table. Like, that's a big thing. We stumbled upon a solution that was outside it, because Scaleform was also kind of expensive too, getting into it, because you had to pay per platform, like $300.
It was like $250 or $250.
But the most popular thing at the time, and probably the most popular kind of third-party thing still, you know, if people are still using it, there are games in production using this, is called NGUI. And it was the first kind of complete, or just to my knowledge, the first really interesting and complete user-friendly system for making GUIs and even simple, like, 2D kind of interactions and games in Unity. So does anybody have any other experience besides... me and NGUI. We did a lot of stuff in NGUI like over the past year, but then kind of moved out of it.
Yeah, I have a little bit, but you could probably explain a lot more concisely.
I had some as well at Cartoon, but I wasn't really the primary person on that. But it was certainly a better system than the on.
Is that what you guys used there?
Remember. Yeah, it was. We used NGUI, and from what I understand, that's pretty much what anybody would use before Unity redid their UI system. It's like, oh, you're starting a project, just go ahead and go pay the, you know, $50 or whatever
it was for NGUI. It's like $100. It's pretty cheap. It's like,
okay, yeah, exactly, yeah, but it would save you so much heartache.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and NGUI is the first kind of like. The system was set up. I mean, it's hard to talk about now because it feels weird because it's very similar to the new one, the new Unity one. But it was the first one where it was mostly based in the menus. Like, you wouldn't go and make you could programmatically make stuff and you could do all those things, but primarily you'd kind of go into the menus, and they even had wizards, and you'd say, hey, I want to make a button. So what it would do is it would make a canvas, and then it would make a panel, and then like an anchor panel, and then you'd make kind of, we made one of our first projects all in NGUI. I never really had a problem with it. Like, yeah. I think it was...
I think it was pretty good until you started to include a lot of sprites on in any particular UI. You had to break up your UIs. Otherwise, you try to do that sprite packing or something like that...
Well, the big issue with NGUI, and it's still a big issue with even all the other stuff, and I think the new Unity and Unity 5 tries to handle with layers, with the 2D layers system, but you would have a Z-layer problem. So like, you would say... Hey, I want to do like a UI. That's great. And you'd make a button, and you'd pull the assets you'd pull to make the button would be from some kind of sprite atlas or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I don't know. Should we explain all the stuff as we go through it for people that don't know what this is?
I think maybe that's a topic for another day. But we just want to briefly overview these UIs. So
So
let's do the high.
Yeah, don't
level,
worry about that. So basically, you're just pulling it from a list of like pictures of the buttons you want to use. And so I'd say, okay, I want to do that. But sometimes there would be different differentiations, and I'd have a few different atlases of different UI elements, you know? I was like, oh, I need to get that home button in here, and that's on my kind of main admin sprite atlas. Mm-hmm. But when you start mixing sprite atlases, it gets really funky, and you can't actually, they're the Z layering, which means it's like, it's almost, imagine, for people that understand what we're talking about, like, it says you had pieces of paper and one's on top of the other. That's like an order. Like, the first one on top of the paper is a 1, and the top of the next one's a 0. So, like, And when how the game renders stuff, it renders them in order as they're looking at it. So if that piece of paper that's under the first one, you just don't see it, you know. So you get these weird kind of ordering issues, and so you'd have to manually set the Z coordinates above and beyond. Like, it just gets kind of, that's where it starts to get funky. And apparently they've kind of addressed some of those. I haven't looked into that because there's like an NGUI 3.0, and we never got into that because we started doing Scaleform and some other stuff. But NGUI is solid. There's games, there are production games, I don't know, not AAA games. I mean, because Unity, we've yet to hit, I mean, has there been a huge AAA game beyond like Hearthstone that we talked about last week, and that last week that it's really huge? I don't know. But
you said, like, that Fallout game in Shelter, that's in Unity.
That's made by AAA developers, so yes, I don't know what they use there.
Wait,
so.
The thing about that is, I don't know if that's in Unity.
It is, actually. I looked at
it was on a message board, Ryan. Jesus.
It was on a comment.
it was on the internet board.
It was on the comments.
Everything is true that people rant on the message board.
Just as an aside, though, to that, go to the actual Fallout Shelter Wikipedia. And I can't remember if they actually had the platform listed, but they actually talked about John Carmack writing code for that back when Bethesda bought id. I have no idea how much of that is accurate, but I just didn't think it was done in Unity. So maybe
you're right.
I didn't look that closely, though.
Well, we'll find out, and it'll be the Unity Game of the Week. Game of the Week later on, but...
Oh, snuck it
until
in.
Then, yeah, don't get excited. We're getting into that later, but... So NGUI is good. It's solid. I mean, honestly, at this point, I've had more experience with NGUI than I've had with the new UI system. But the side story is that the guys that made it, I don't know, the company was Tesharan, because they also have a TNET networking solution that we've had.
That's a whole nother bag of worms, right?
Don't giggle.
Mixed
don't
results giggle. With, but it was solid. I mean, what was available? I mean, if you unless you want to roll your own like we started to, that's different. But yeah. Of the available things, it was the most solid. But to Sharon and the guy, I gotta forget. We should look this up. We should really be more prepared before we do this. But the guy that, and I've watched plenty of talks. They actually hired the guy that did Ingui, so that's how Unity is pretty cool. They'll say, "Hey, you're making this cool third party plugin. That's pretty sweet. We're gonna at least support you or hire you." I've heard them, like, you know, they really do support the asset store creators. And he went in to say, "Hey, we need a new UI system because Ingui really sucks." So they kind of started trying to integrate the Ingui kind of philosophy. And I've watched, there's a talk from two or three, 4 years ago. We'll link it in the show notes. I have to remember to do that. But about where the new GUI system wasn't ready, but they're like, "Okay, we're going to talk to you about where we are." And they went through and they basically based one, like it was like GGUI or something, which they codenamed it. And it was based on Ingui, but as they went through that and tried that for a year, they realized it was broken and mess, and then they kind of didn't know what to do. And Ryan, you said you don't know if he works for Unity anymore, or?
Yeah, I heard there supposedly was a falling out. Again, you might know, we be should do some better research. But
this is the speculative podcast. We don't watch facts. Or,
exactly.
Facts are boring.
Conspiracy theory.
Gossip is better. I don't
know. Yeah. I think he murdered everyone at Unity.
Yeah. I think he's the spawn of Satan. I don't know where. T-Nut. Yeah, I don't remember. Zach's just sitting there burning T-Nut.
Yeah.
Anyway, so whatever happened, they moved on and tried to do, whether it was him or another new team, they moved on to like a new philosophy, and that kind of taught them something. Because the new system, even still, the new system has a lot to do with Ingui. It's very similar. It just might have a few tweaks. But eventually, they teased this for like 2 years that we're working on our own UI system that's really great. And finally, I think it was the fall of 2014, they finally, or no, it was the summer, right? It was when we Unite last year. That's when they did it.
Yeah.
It was they announced the 4.6 beta, which you get access to if you, whatever, do the URL. And it was they were launching the UI system. So it was their new, I think they call it UGUI, right? I don't know if they call right. that in the thing. And so that's their thing. It's kind of like a kind of retrofitted version and kind of improved version of Ingui. And so we've kind of started diving into that sporadic elements. But Zach's actually had the most experience probably at this point with it. So what do you think of it, Zach?
I both like it and hate it at the same time.
That's just all game development.
Right, yeah. I like it because it's relatively easy to get what you want on screen pretty quickly. Like, I can mock up a UI in about, you know, probably like 2-3 minutes.
I'm not one to tell tales out of school. But
However, it's based off of like an anchoring system. So you can change where you want to anchor this button to. So when the screen gets resized, the button will move relative to that anchor. However, so you when
which,
you make
which
the
is
button,
a good intention though. I mean that's
right.
Like
it's a very good intention, and it almost works right. So for instance, when you create a button and you say you want to make it pixel perfect, you place it where you want it, and then say you want that button to stay in its exact position and size relative to its background, you would have to place your anchors in the corners of your rectangle that contain your, say, your button. Now, what I've noticed is I set my pixel perfect sizes and I move the anchor to the corner, and as I'm moving the anchor, my button size is actually going down a little bit.
Just, I mean, the one nice thing about that, the new UI and also in GUI as well, is just like, you know, it's represented in the hierarchy, and so you can kind of see the layout of things, and, you know, that hierarchy also does represent to a degree, you know, some of the rendering order as well as, you know, sorting order of things. And it's also really nice to be able to just sort of visually see that and be able to throw it into a prefab as well. You know, if you're just working in some of the old on GUI stuff and it's just a script, you know, you just have the file, you can't really see it. But yeah, I don't know. I've always thought it was cool to be able to, like, you know, sort of just take that in the hierarchy or in the scene and create a prefab
now,
for
I've actually worked on that project that you did that in, and the only thing I warn against is when you did it, you made a prefab of the canvas. So when you put a canvas in a scene, you have to make sure you have a event system. or else the buttons just won't work.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, yeah, and that, then you run into also, if you've got to watch out, because depending on when you're loading those prefabs, like, oh, do I already have one UI system there, and then you load another one, now you have two event systems, what's handling what? Yeah, so there are definitely some caveats and pitfalls, and gotcha. but overall, though, I think, you know, you're talking about speaking to the atlases, too, that's also a nice way to be able to maybe break things up, you know, where, you know, you can load those in and out of memory based off of what scene you're in. Like, oh, maybe I'm in the store scene, so I can, you know, load that in and it has its atlas. And then if I move back to the main game scene, you know, then you save memories tight. You can kick out the store and then load in the game one. And, you know, hey, it's, everybody's got their own thing. So.
One of the things that I think it's its biggest issue is instantiating things, instantiating the new UI from code. It's not as easy as it was with OnGUI, where you would just have one line and you define your rectangle and then it draws it. This new one, you have to instantiate it, position it, and then you have to set the anchor, so the offset for the max and min of your rectangle. And then on top of that, it uses different coordinate systems from screen coordinates. And another thing, you also have to worry about if you're changing aspect ratios. That will often, even if you have preserve aspect on your buttons, like, which is a choice, you can choose like a Boolean that will make it so that whatever image you have on your button will remain the same aspect ratio. So even if you have that set to true and you change your aspect ratio, so say you're making it for iPad and you decide, oh, wait, I want to make it for the iPhone, then you have to go in and make sure that you edit the your UI and make sure that it'll actually fit and stay and not stretch your buttons, because I know Apple is really picky about buttons keeping their aspect ratio.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. And just speaking of that, is just the difference in all of these UIs or these tools and solutions for UI is just how, you know, how easy are they to animate, how easy they are to, you know, implement and instantiate. You know, because, you know, as you go from, you know, UI system to UI system, the ease of, like, animating them, the ease of, you know, loading fonts in them, you know, varies widely. So you have to keep that in mind as to which solution to go with, and depending on what you're trying to get done in your UI. Like, speaking of just, you know, the new UI system and just animating that, Zach kind of touched on this, is just, you know, you have to, you know, you like moving the position of a UI element is different than you moving a game object, for instance. Yeah, you have to use like the anchored position versus, you know, a position. I mean, it just works differently because there's the rect transform is not the same as, you know, regular game object transform. So, yeah, I mean, that's just one of the things that you have to keep in mind as you move from, you know, these different UI systems, is just how you animate them, how, you know, these UIs are reacting to touch or to click and to, you know, hover animations, etc. So,
right.
Yeah, you have something UI specific
UI specific. Yeah,
it's a good segue.
So,
God, you messed up my segue. Jesus. I was looking at it. I was like, yes!
I could hear it coming too.
I was trying to do the alley oop, and then hopefully,
Zach. Yeah, then I had to, you know, jump
Zach
in away.
Stuffs it.
Good brain.
It was in my house.
As for animating, I've animating these the GUI.
You're talking about the segue now. Go ahead.
Continue. Just stole my segue. Completely ruined it for you, didn't
just
I?
Continue.
I've actually used iTween to animate my because when the way you have them in your hierarchy is they're actually, you can make them as game objects. I can use iTween to actually tween it onto my screen, but again, what Obina said is the rec transform is different from your normal transform for a game object, so you have to take that into account and make sure you adjust for the difference in scales.
When this is a quick question, my experience is primarily within GUI, but when I would animate a bunch of UIs with that, I would have to use local position. I couldn't use position because position is like screwed because it's like it's based on the canvas and based on, so they only take local position as a relative position based on the actual canvas. Is that the same with the new
I believe so, because system? Everything is a child to the Canvas object.
Okay. Yeah.
So
it depends. Mm-hmm. It really just depends. Like, if you're wanting to use, if it depends on how you set up your UI. If you wanted to move the whole UI canvas, then you could use the position of the canvas.
Right. Right.
But most times you're gonna be dealing with, you know, the anchored position of a rect transform that's a child of that canvas. So.
Right.
You know, for all the UIs that I've done, all the animations I've done personally in the new UI, and even in, you know, like he said, he's using iTween and GoKit and stuff like that, which is another
GoKit.
Tool.
GoKit, I recommend.
Yeah, me too. It's much. I feel like it's easier than iTween.
I think it's actually a little more performant than iTween too.
Yeah, and it's robust. I think. Anyway, but enough of that.
I'm a GoKit fan.
Yeah, me too. But anyway,
get GoKit.
So, anyways, getting outside it. So, those are the main, like, we talked about some third-party solutions that have, like, the history of that and kind of a retrospective. But, and then I kind of think going forward, I mean, the new, their native GUI system, what do they call it? Is it the GUI, the UI, or?
I don't know. I know it to be UnityEngine.UI, and the module includes in C#. That's
so they
about
call,
all
they
I
call
got,
it UGUI, so I guess that's, that's what they call, I don't know. Anyways, so, I mean, if you want to go with that or in GUI, that's fine. But now we can go over a few reasons why, like, just things to think about. We already touched on a couple of those, like, when you're choosing, like, why, like, the pros and cons and the kind of, not the pros and cons list, but those kind of the rows of that pros and cons list. If you, all the columns are all these, like, GUI systems, then you, GUI, that's my thing, GUI systems, then these are the kind of rows of that. And the first one is a big deal. Like, this is... I don't know. I don't think most people... This is a mini rant, but I don't think most people think about this stuff. Guys, you need to have pixel-perfect graphics in your games, right? And resolution is a big deal. And so I think people, a lot of times, they make Unity games, and they're like, well, I can just scale up or scale down or something. But there's two ways to handle this. It's like, so say, like, for instance, you have a iPhone. Let's talk about mobile, because this is where this is a problem. I mean, usually with PC, it kind of... I don't know. It doesn't matter that much. But say you have a, what is it, Unity 5? I mean, sorry, iOS 5 is probably the, let's say an iPhone 5. So you have a 4-inch screen that's widescreen, that's a 16:9 screen. And what's the, it's like 1136 by, Zach, what is it? Come on.
I don't remember off the top of my head.
It's 1136 by whatever, 960? Yeah, I think that's what it is. That's an iPhone 5. You go all the way up to an iPhone 6 Plus, that's a full on 920 by 1080. So those are different resolutions. So what are you going to do for that? Are you going to have, does your UI system like support separate sprite atlases for separate textures? This used to be a bigger problem when you had phones that weren't Retina resolution, that weren't double DPI resolution, that meaning, like, now when you had the iPhone 4 and a bunch of earlier Android devices, they were... I'm trying to explain this in a way that kind of makes sense to people that don't know what this is, but you would have... They're much lower resolutions. You could kind of see the pixels on the screen, and when they jumped up, the first one was the iPhone 4, and then a lot of... I don't know Android devices, so whatever. Android ice cream jelly bean, ice cream sundae, whatever it is, they move, the devices, the Galaxy Supernova thing, they moved up to where it's like it's a the Retina resolution, which basically means they're doubling the pixel density of it, so you don't actually see, you can't actually see with your naked eye, see pixels on the screen. So it makes a really crisp and sharp image on the screen where the fonts render really nicely, and it's really cool. But it also, at that time, you're like, okay, hold on, I have non-Retina screens and I have Retina screens. And so one of the solutions, especially in iOS development and even Unity stuff, was used like, well, I have to do separate assets for ones that are lower resolution, and then I have higher assets for ones that are a bigger resolution. And that becomes an issue. And some of these, I know InGUI supports that. You can do reference atlases that you can kind of tie in different atlases for the different resolutions. I don't know about the new GUI system. I don't know if, Zach, you've even looked into that. Probably not. we don't have a lot of variable platform projects, so...
You can do that, but also, generally, you could just make it... I usually use just the biggest resolution I can, right, and then scale it down. So that's generally what I've done so far.
And that that seems like that would work. And this is like a weird graphic design tip. That seems like that would work, but a lot of systems use like, I want to make it 4K and just scale it down to, you know, not standard 480p. But the problem with that is usually those rendering engines don't do that really well, and there's a lot of like stepping where the edges look very jagged, and it doesn't actually look right. You've seen that before. We've all seen that before. And so, like, scaling up where you're actually stretching, the opposite of that is scaling up where it's a low resolution. You scale up and you can see the pixels and it looks really gross. It's like hot garbage when you get to that.
Yeah,
you
know? It's very gross.
Like, that's a problem, too. So they're different solutions, and that becomes a complication. That's something that scares people away. But that's a problem now. If you're going to make a mobile game, that's kind of a big problem. I think that's an issue. It's not a problem. What? It's an issue.
Well, it's an issue with a lot of different platforms because, you know, even with a PC, like if it's browser-based or standalone, I mean, the different aspect ratios and resolutions on PCs, it's more variable than, you know, mobile devices. Maybe not Android variable, but close.
Right.
You know, because, I mean, you start hitting some of those monitors, it's like, what is it, 4x3, 16x9, 16x10?
Well, somewhere like,
and
then, right,
like
16,
what's the resolution
10,
we're running at? Yeah, and it's, you know, you just start hitting all these weird scenarios. And it can be very difficult for, you know, whoever's working on the UI and like creating the textures to find that sweet spot of like, hey, what atlases do we create and how do we detect what we're at on this user's computer and give the most vivid image for that?
Yeah, that's an issue. And like maybe if you're just a pure developer and you're getting into this, you don't care. I don't know if you guys care, but like coming from a design background and knowing other designers, like the big thing about designers, like, we're broken people. We have a problem. And the problem is that you want things to be perfect. You're like, that's broken. I need that. That pixel is weird and blurred, and I don't like that. That's weird. And, you know, Bina has experience with that.
People. Yeah, when there's a bad image, starts getting a nervous twitch. So.
Yeah, it bothers me. I want things to be pixel perfect. And so that's where that resolution independence comes, because it's a problem when you scale down or scale up. And there's always going to be a compromise, because you can't – I mean, with – iOS devices, it's weird because you have an iPad, which is surprisingly, I like the aspect ratio, but it's 4:3, and that becomes, as opposed to like a standard 16:9 on TVs and every other phone device and tablet in the world. So that the aspect ratio is one, and that's where that anchoring system that Zach mentioned earlier comes into play. But then just having different sprite atlases, and so what you kind of have to do, different sprite atlases for different resolutions. So what you have to do is end up kind of just splitting the difference and go, well, if the gap is wide enough, if you have a 4K display, we're going to make one for that. And then we're going to kind of say, well, all right, we're going to go like 1,000 pixels down and make another atlas. And it's kind of, I don't want to scare you guys away at this point, but that's something to think about. Just look into the kind of resolution, like different resolution densities and then also different resolution independence. I don't know how much different the resolution independence is. I mean, between the 16x10 and 16:9, but I mean, most for mobile, except for iPad, most things are 16:9 now, so that might be a thing. Who knows? So we'll go forward.
Well, and
go ahead.
Yeah, and at some point you just have to say, you know, well, screw it, this is what we support. You know, don't get scared about all these different resolutions
and
aspect
ratios.
Yeah, at some point you just got to pick, you know, the biggest of the litter and say, okay, these guys are the powerhouses, you know, like as you said on Android. Hey, I'm going to build it for the M9 or the Edge or whatever's the biggest one. We'll support that. These like off brands off to the side. Sorry, guys, you get what you get. You know, we can't iterate for everything.
You're probably going to make more money on iOS. I'm just saying. I'm just going to walk away and just say.
No, that's a
yeah.
fact. Drop mic. You know, I think there's been enough studies that say that's what you'll do.
And so we'll go moving on. Like, among the other things, the things to consider when choosing the different UI systems. The platform restrictions, I mean, that's a simple thing. It's like whether you support, like for instance, Scaleform doesn't support like the web interface of the UI system or doesn't support, you know, different things. Like, so there, you have to just look at that. I mean, that doesn't really need a discussion. Like sometimes different UI systems don't support deploying to different systems. Performance is an issue, right? Like Scaleform, I've noticed we've had... Yes. Have we had some performance issues?
Yeah, we've definitely had some performance issues. And even with the plugin in itself, there was a time that, you know, it was leaking memory from loading those Swift files. And you have to, like, sometimes you have to manage the Swift allocation and deallocation of memory manually, because sometimes, you know, there's an error with, I don't know what happened at some times. You have to, like, manually kill or destroy a movie. So you have to watch out with performance and I guess the toll it takes from using Scaleform for sure. And even like if we talk about like using the new UI or the images that you load and, you know, and what platform you are, I guess this kind of ties into platform restriction as well. But loading like super huge images for a small, you know, button or something, that's also going to feed into performance and whether, you know, how to actually use, you know, I guess this is more of an asset topic than a UI performance topic, but, you know, that's something you consider.
That goes into it, yeah. I mean, but that goes into the freedom that you allow the artist, right? Because,
exactly.
Like, I mean, because if you're working with just the Unity GUI system, like I keep saying, I want to say GUI UI. Anyway, if you're working with any kind of native system, like, yeah, you got to give me a sprite, or you got to give me a JPEG or a PNG. That's all you can give me. Mm-hmm. But with the Flash thing, you can kind of give enough rope to hang yourself with that, because you can get nested movie clips and all this crazy stuff, like vector like elements and also like the bitmap elements. And
yeah.
I feel like we scare people away in these episodes. Like we start getting into like the snake's nest that is game development. Don't be scared away. Forward, pioneer. Okay, so we talked about the animation needs. That's another kind of obvious thing. Like some UI systems are easy to work with animation. Some aren't. So you kind of need to think about that, because that's one of the things, like we said, that's the last 5%, 10% of your game, the polish. You're going to get to that. It's like, oh, it's really hard to animate these asset. Like, I want to have the UI, the buttons jump into the screen or whatever, or kind of bounce in. Sometimes you can't do that, so you need to look into that. The workflow, we talked about that with Flash, meaning that, like, how you kind of work in your studio or your team, meaning, like, is your system one that you can only all work in Unity, or can the artist work in a separate program like Flash or something else and then kind of give you the assets? So that's something. And the last one's a big one. It's dev support, right? We've all had experience with incomplete documentation and crappy support.
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm all on.
What is the Autodesk? We've talked about Scaleform, but what we wanted to buy an Android SD Android license for Autodesk, and it took like 2 months for them to even
exactly.
We paid them, right?
We paid them first, and
$300 American currency.
Exactly. And then we emailed them, and then the email told you to call them, and then when you called them, the call told you, or the voicemail told you to, you know, email them. So I mean, it was like a back and forth, and we never got an answer.
Brilliant.
You know, just send us in a loop, and even still, like, eventually I just let it go, and I was like, okay, whatever. I'm just going to use the evaluation license for Scaleform for Android. And then like 2 months later, I checked my email, and I was like, okay, finally you have your license key, which is, it came at a good time because now the project is due. So so in that effect, I guess they did their job, I guess. But it was like, and another thing about, speaking of dev support, I mean, there's a lot of thing about Scaleform is there is community support, so you do have a lot of people who have used the not so much with Unity, that's I guess the problem, not so much with Unity, but in general, if you do happen to use it, just you want to go to mobile or something like that, there's some support there. But actually talking to, you know, someone that works with Autodesk is kind of tough. They do have forms there, but I think they're really slow to support that Scaleform with Unity, at least the plugin for that. So it's really there's a couple of videos and YouTube tutorials out there, but other than that, it's not that hard to learn. But once you know just getting started, it's kind of tough to understand what's going on, and their documentation is very sparse when it comes to Unity. Even like how to set up the licensing, like how to register your license key, that's actually confusing. So
it's tough. That comes from the system of Unreal like 3, where the system was like, hey, to make a new game in Unreal 3, you have to copy our example game and then delete everything, and that's how you make a new project. Like, what? Well, what? They're like, oh, don't delete these files. Those are important. Like, don't worry about that. So, yeah, dev support. Like, and that's the thing. It's like, I mean, in GUI, you're gonna have a lot. I mean, Coherence and Deconfort, I don't know. On GUI, there's a lot of just people bitching about that stuff. So I don't know. You'll get to that. But the new Unity system, the one thing is there's a lot of like kind of resources from Unity itself and mm-hmm. from the
and there's just so many Unity users that they're bound to generate content. So.
Yeah, and that's they're really pushing that, and they're a big company, so they're going to get behind that. And so, I mean, if you're deciding between InGUI and like the new Unity GUI system, like they're going to put enough muscle behind that. So I'd pick the new one and just see what happens.
Yeah.
Maybe. So anyways, real quick, let's just go through these real quick. These are some things to remember when you're like kind of making a UI that most people don't understand, like, or just don't think about. Like, when you just don't have the experience of shipping a game and seeing like, oh, that sucks. You know, we've all done that. We've done that at work and other personal projects where you make things, you're like, ooh.
I don't make things like that.
Yeah, I don't make crap. I make gold. I crap gold. Okay.
crap gold. There you go. Damn it.
So the one thing, the first thing is like we talked about is keep it concise, and that has to do with like don't crowd your UI with a bunch of stuff and it doesn't mean anything. Like really keep it simple down to what's the most important thing on the screen. There's a kind of a philosophy when you make, I come from web development where you say, web design where you say, what the user needs to do one function on this page, or one thing needs to be the priority. And if you start having three or four priorities, that's a problem with a GUI system or with a UI, because then you don't know what's going on. The next thing is something that we try to do all the time. Then sometimes you always run out of time on. And that's kind of understandable. Is to keep it tactile. You kind of add animations and sounds. Sounds are the things that always get left to the freaking.
Yeah, but they're extremely important, and they kind of immerse the player in the game. So. Definitely want to keep an eye on keeping it tactile, keeping the sounds there, hover animations, click animations, etc.
Yeah. And all that stuff feeds into giving the player immediate responses. So keeping your UI responsive is very important. I mean, just the other day I was playing, I was trying to use a launcher for one of my mini games that I play, and you click the play button, and it just sits there. What's happening? I don't know. And about 2 minutes later, it launches the game. So it gave no feedback that I had clicked the button, but it was launching in the background.
Yeah.
Well, see, you know, that sort of like animation, sound, weightiness, and responsiveness, it, like you guys said, is something that's very important. It's like Blizzard's UIs. I always feel like those feel very responsive, very weighty. Like every time you're clicking something, there's a ka-chunk or a thud.
Kadoosh. Like and it crunches.
Yeah. It's
where, you want it to be crunchy. You want that UI to be really crunchy.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, something will fly out of like ching, 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 and then boom when you hit the button. So
can we get more sound effects?
Guys, he's doing it. He's really doing it. He's using my sound effects. The guys, Obina and Zach have always made fun of me.
And we will continue to make fun of
me. I make weird sound effects when I'm describing things like.
I was like, a ray does that?
Yeah. It's like, yeah, that's a ray. Because I feel like a ray. Like, that makes sense. Ryan's speaking my language. I think that's what he's
doing. Yeah.
I could be down the hall and hear him talking about something. Oh, he's talking about an array.
Yeah. So I start doing clicks and stuff. All right.
Yes, okay.
And the next thing is like, yeah, keep it tactile. That's really important. And that's one of the things we talked about with the GUI system, the UI things going in at the last 10%, the responsiveness and the sound effects and the effects might go in the last 1%. And you kind of sometimes just ditch those. You're like, oh, whatever. I need to release this. But no, that actually kind of sails the game past the 50%. Like, the polish can take it all the way. Because a menu system can just be fun to play with. Even if the game sucks. You know, you're like, oh, this is kind of fun. Mm-hmm. I like this. Some games are just UI menu designer. Systems.
Yeah. Sometimes, like, even, like, if I think back, like, when I played Destiny and just their simple UI, just, like, hovering with your thumbstick and you have the little... A tracker or whatever that you could just move around. It's just fun to play with and hover over your items in Destiny. So sometimes you just get lost in the UI, which you should do.
Yeah, Destiny, dude, that's a perfect example. Because even if you just say a feel of a UI, even user experience, even meaning just how the game controls and feels and just the UI and all that stuff is superb. The game sucks, you know, the content-wise, but it's fun. We get entranced by it because it's fun just to... experiencing interacting with it, that's a testament to what kind of a user experience and UI can do. And then also make it pretty, use good fonts. If you don't know how to do it, just hire a designer. You know, that's probably the best thing.
If you don't know how to do it, hire Andrew.
I don't have time.
There you go. I don't have time for that shit.
Send us an email. Send us at thedebuglog@gmail.com. Not to me. No, I'm not saying to me, but we know designers. We know people. We can pass that on if you need. We can sell their wares. So be it. So
exactly.
That's fine. So I think that's UI wrapped up.
Actually, hold on. Actually, just one. Reverse Sorry, it. One more thing that just crossed my mind that I had to deal with on a project that won't go into dirty details about this, but with UI, localization can be a huge problem with UI too. So, meaning, say, you know, you'll make your game for, say, an English-speaking country, and then all of a sudden, hey, we need to support Germany.
Absolutely.
Now, you know,
yeah.
words in German and words in English have a vastly different length to them.
That's perfect. Yeah, I take that for granted because since coming from like the web development world, like most of the times when I design stuff, I design it for infinite content, right? Or like or a sane amount of like, okay, like, well, this thing's a one line. It's like, yeah, but what if it's three lines? Like, we need to figure out that or limit that content. Like, so that's absolutely true things. Like, people, like, if you have a chat window or chat bot or some kind of like, hey, you're in an RPG and you can name your character, but what if their character is 87,000 characters long? You're like, what? Yeah. It's like, we didn't put a limit in that, and now the UI is broken and it's everywhere on the screen. So
and so that's maybe where you start thinking about like, oh, is it, you know, iconography or actually text, and what UI system does better with, like, if it's text, looking it up, or, you know, what, you know, maybe actually indexing off iconography. So. Another random thing.
That's a whole, like, study into that. Like, we kind of hit this, but, like, even just getting into the philosophy of, like, the information hierarchy and just user experience is a whole other topic.
That's
that
true,
we can touch upon that.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get into that. That could be interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get a good guest on for that, too. That'd be good. So.
Game of the week.
Game of the week.
Oh, that's right.
What? What was that?
I don't know. What was Ryan talking about?
I said, that's right.
I'm just going to put your voice just right.
Oh, yeah.
Going through puberty over here.
Yeah.
You know, 36. It's my third puberty. It's like...
Yeah. All right. Game of the week. And I don't think... I've listened back to our episodes, and we never explained that these were Unity games of the week. Games that were built in Unity.
Wow.
We said that, like, game of the week. We're going to talk about this game. And it's like... And I think we mentioned later, but the whole purpose of game of the week is a segment is that we highlight games and showcase games that are built in Unity, because now it's becoming ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's like a stupid amount of games that are released in Unity. So, the first few episodes, we're going to hit obvious ones. The first one we hit was Besiege, but not so obvious, but Zach was obsessed with it and we liked it. It looks cool. And last time was Hearthstone, which won Unity Game of the Year 2014, and obviously it's Blizzard. Like, they print money, so that's another one. But this week's game this week's game of the week is another really high profile for a couple of reasons. It's called Monument Valley, and did it win some awards last year?
It won like three awards.
Okay. It must have won like design and like
one art. Maybe.
Yeah, it was nominated for everything, so it must have won something. And I actually, it was funny because before going to Unite last year, the Unity conference, we I downloaded a bunch of like the nominees. Like, I haven't played these games yet, so I'm like in like the plane in the hotel room, and then I still didn't play them. Like, on the way back from Seattle last year, on the plane, like Zach's watching Frozen.
you just threw him under the bus.
He watched Kick-Ass 2, and then he watched Frozen, which is the weirdest mix of movies in the world.
Hey, there was the only two good movies
times.
Zach. You had it loaded on your iTunes.
And Zach and
it was that or Must Love Dogs. Come on now.
And Obina was sitting in between us, and he was like just tired and hungover or whatever. I don't know what he was. And he was just like, I don't want to talk to you guys anymore. But I pulled up my iPad and I started playing Monument Valley. It's like, I've never touched this before, and it won some awards. So am I going to play this? And I knew about it, but I just hadn't touched it. And Obina was just kept staring, and he's like kind of zoning out, looking at me playing this game. Because I was too, as you play it. Because what it is, it's this kind of platform, it's like a puzzle game, but it's really kind of surreal and neat art direction. It's made by like a design, it's Us2, it's a company that made it, and basically that was like, it was a design studio, and they're like, they had a few people, like a big design studio, like graphic design and web design studio, and they had a few people like, hey, we want to make games. And so they let a few people like branch off and say, hey, you guys start making games. And they made a couple games before this one, but this one is like a really kind of the one that broke through, and it's obvious because just the art direction is incredible. And It's an isometric, basically puzzler, and it's kind of like an M.C. Escher inspired puzzle where you kind of is it a princess that's the main character, and you kind of revolve platforms and let them go to certain things. But it's a puzzle based all on optical illusions. You play this, Ryan, haven't you?
Yeah, yeah, I've seen that. It's either a princess or a dunce cap, you know. I don't know.
You can never really tell.
You're being sexist, Ryan. Okay.
Oh, wow.
Hey, no, that's your interpretation.
You said it. I didn't say it. All right.
No, Andrew, that was on you.
But, So it's like do that, and there's like 12 levels, but it's really cool art design. They have a really nice menu system. They have a new DLC package that has like more levels because people said it was too easy. I think I got to the last level that night we played it, the plane trip we played at like 12, because it's a couple hour game, and then I just stopped. Abina fell asleep, and I just started watching the movie. He's like, if nobody's watching me, it's not worth it. But it's a cool
game.
So
many things.
And the other reason, because it's really high profile, because just in video games, Spectrum alone, it got a lot of praise and critical praise for that, but one of our favorite shows, House of Cards, it's a Netflix series, and in their third season, they had this weird plot line where the main character, Frank Underwood, who's the... that's a spoiler. He's a political figure. He's a political figure, and he reads a video game review of Monument Valley. Or he starts playing it first, maybe, and then he reads a video game review of Monument Valley, and he likes the video game review so much, like the way the guy wrote it, that he hires that guy to write his memoir. But they mention Monument Valley a bunch, and the guy describes Monument Valley, which is wild if you're just an indie game developer, and they just pick your game as a plot device, which is crazy. You know, it's like, oh, okay, cool, that's neat.
Fantastic.
Yeah, that's neat. So it's infamous for two reasons, so it's a good game.
Wait, did you say third season, by the way? I thought it was only the second. Is it
the second? No, it's the third season, right?
Is it? Oh, man.
No, the third season.
We should look these things up.
It's the third season.
Yeah, it's the third season.
Yeah, I can't spoil it. No, dude,
I think it's the first season.
Yes, okay.
Vice to press. Think about it.
It's the third season.
Again, spoiler.
Yeah, no, spoiler. Spoiler.
Of an information technology company. I don't know what you're talking about. So, anyway, Monument Valley, check it out. It's like it's a couple bucks, $2, $3. I don't know. It's a good game. It's phenomenal. Like you won't regret buying it. It's on Android it's iOS.
It's on iOS, but Android's I guess projected to come out soon. So
no, it's on Android.
Is it now?
Yeah, one of our coworkers have played it on Android. Yeah, it's on Android. Oh, so I was like, oh, that hurt me. Okay.
No, all right, whatever.
You cheated on now that it came out on Android. Okay. All right, I think.
I don't want to play it anymore.
What?
Said, I don't want to play it anymore. Yeah. Cheating ass game.
Yeah. Get on the Android. Jelly bean eating mug. Okay. That's it for tonight, I guess. We've embarrassed ourselves enough.
Seriously.
Second
Speak
episode.
For I still got plenty of time.
Yeah. We'll let Zach do an After Dark episode where he just rants.
Ugh.
Have smooth sax playing behind him. So, all right.
Hi, this is Zach.
Yeah. Hey, this is Zach. What you doing?
All right, that's a good.
Abina's like, end this episode.
End, yeah, I know.
All right. So in the meantime,
delete. Yeah.
In the meantime, if you want to reach out to us, you can write us an email at thedebuglog@gmail.com. We have a Facebook page, which we're kind of debating on whether having a normal, that sounds kind of pretentious, fan page, that's what they call it, or just having a general Facebook group, which I think kind of would be more interesting.
Yes.
That's what they call it. It's not my fault. That's what they call it, a fan page. But or just a general group where everybody's post is just equal, you know? Because that's what's cool. It sucks in those fan pages because when the people post, like the members, it's just on the side and nobody sees it. But if we have a cool group, everybody can just contribute and post cool things and post the games you're looking for. So by the time this comes out, we're going to have a Facebook group of some kind. So check it out. That'll be cool. So
cool.
And we have Twitter and all this stuff.
And
that's
a website.
Fine. Yeah, we have a website. It's thedebuglog.com. So check that out.
Oh, actually, yeah, one more, I guess, plug. You guys are going to be at Unite, right, this
yes,
year?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Yes?
Yes. Okay. Well, that's a plug for you. I don't know if I can make it.
Are you
going to
make
it? I hope to be. I don't know. There was mention at the company of sending some
Ryan,
of us out.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah, man.
You're going to have, like, at least two vacation days by then. Come on.
Exactly.
Okay.
Obina's.
So,
you
Obina,
can sleep
is that
in
an invitation?
Room.
Your room? No, I want Obina's.
Oh, well,
I'm
Obina's.
I'm picking my little
Did you get the double
here,
twin
right?
or the one queen, Obina?
Oh, you know,
what'd
I
you
got
get?
The one queen.
Oh, okay. That's plenty of spoon in room. Come on, man.
Yeah, that's true. Like, let's start plugging this now. Unite 2015 in Boston. We're going to go to that. So if anybody wants to, like, meet up, let's start talking about it. Send us an email. Maybe we'll kind of figure out a way to – maybe we'll make a Facebook event or something.
For sure. And I think we should even do, like, a episode too. That would be nice.
Yeah, of course, we're going to take recorders, and we're going to try to get interviews with people. But if anything – that's going to happen regardless, but it'd be cool if even get a few people together at some bar or something and just say, hey, we're going to get together and just kind of chat or whatever. That'd be cool. That'll be coming forward. There's going to be much more episodes before that, but that's a big thing. So, anyways, Unite 2015 Boston.
Cool.
Sign up for it now.
Awesome.
Tell them, give them the code.
You get the early bird special. I think Unity still has like an early bird. Oh, is it?
Dang, I think it was like that's why you signed up that day. It was like June or something. That's
I think that was the end of the super early bird.
Yeah, I think that was a super early.
There's still an early bird. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Still pitching.
It only cost
on
you $1,000 to go per person. So we've already done the math.
I'm gonna try to put that on the company.
That's including like flight and hotel and everything.
So, but again, Obina, you can stay in Obina's room. All the followers of the show.
You guys are whoring me out right now.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So. But I get to be Big Spoon. So.
Yeah. So, anyways, so do that. Stay tuned for that, and we'll have some more cool things coming up. I think we're going to kind of try to put a bunch of episodes out before that, and then kind of go to a little more bi-weekly schedule after that. But until then, until next time, my name's Andrew.
I'm Obina.
I'm Zach.
I'm Ryan.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Well, is Andrew still here? I haven't heard from him.
Yeah, I think he dropped.
No, Andrew.
Where?
Well, see, it still says he's on the line.
Yeah. Like, it sounded like somebody was peeing.
Yeah, and the call was just getting
weird. Well, hopefully he didn't, like, pass out and pee himself on the podcast. Because we're certainly going to air that.
Yeah, no, that's definitely.
Take both.
Yeah.